Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. I have the pleasure of bringing to you Teresa DeWitt Lynch. Teresa and I have been collaborating on some projects, including the Path of the Bullet Conference, which we put together, managed, moderated, and ran in January of 2022. And now we're back with a different topic. Teresa is board certified through the International Association of Forensic Nurses as an advanced forensic nurse and an adult and adolescent sexual assault nurse examiner. You may have seen this abbreviated as SANE, for sexual assault nurse examiner. She has extensive experience and served in the military and became the go-to expert for Europe when she was stationed in Italy, as people had questions about sexual assault and how that examination process came into play. She testifies now as an expert and has extensive experience looking at sexual assault records. Welcome to the show, Teresa.
Thanks, Pat. Very happy to be here.
As a legal nurse consultant, you may be working on cases that involve sexual assault. So some of the questions that we're focusing in on this podcast will be how you can get involved in these cases, how you can interpret these medical records, and assist attorney clients. So first of all, what documents should an LNC look for when the allegation is sexual assault?
It's very important if you can get all of the documents that you review everything, not just the sexual assault examination documentation. You also want the emergency room records from that visit, any follow-up medical records related to the assault. And then also you want the police reports and any DNA or forensic laboratory reports, witness statements, because there's times when either the suspect or the victim may tell police certain information and then it may not get told to the medical providers or vice versa. So you want to be able to capture a very good, well-rounded idea of the whole incident, not just the sexual assault itself.
All right. And I know for some people in the program who are some of our listeners may never have seen a sexual assault nurse examination report. Can you tell us typically how is it constructed? What are the details that are documented on such a report?
So it's a pretty comprehensive report. And currently each healthcare facility is supposed to have to either be able to provide a forensic nurse to perform a sexual assault exam or be able to transport patients where they can be seen by a specially trained forensic nurse. And so the sexual assault examination documentation is usually different, but it generally contains, in California and Washington and Florida, the information is the same. So you'll have a brief medical history and it focuses on elements that may impact the creation of injury or the findings that you might have. So what types of medications are they on? Have they been pregnant recently? What types of chronic and acute illnesses or injuries do they have that are not related to the assault? Stuff like that. Then you have, because not only is this being performed for healthcare reasons, but also the forensic aspect of it too. And so the forensic toxicologist reads this report. The forensic the DNA analyst and the forensic lab personnel, the forensic scientists, they read this report too. And so having the patient right in front of us, we can also capture some information related to what could influence their interpretation of the results. So a lot of the times we'll ask about recent sexual encounters outside of the assault within the last couple of days. Have they showered since the assault, used the bathroom? So some of those daily activities that could facilitate eroding the evidence, trace evidence prior to them arriving. Then you have, there's two sections of the assault history itself. You've got the narrative section where the patient just free flowing talks about what happened during the assault. And then there's also very specific questions that are asked too. Were there any weapons used? Was there lubrication used? Was a condom used? So even though you've got their narrative of what took place in you, there's also specific questions that they ask too. Then the next section is the examination portion. So you'll have, what tools did they use during the examination? Did they use an alternate light source? Did they use a speculum? Did they use an anoscope? Did they use a camera? What type of camera? And then the examination findings. And then also you'll have a section for the evidence inventory. And it's very important that this be meticulously completed because, like I said, the forensic lab, once they crack the kit open, they're going to inventory that box and document what they find. And so it's very important for chain of custody and evidence integrity reasons that those two lists match up, which is one of the reasons why you want to obtain the forensic science documentation, because it does include their inventory. So you're looking for what was collected, what the time of the collection, and then the disposition, who was it turned over to or where was it stored? So those are some of, when you're looking through this, those are some of the key aspects in terms of analyzing the procedures of the sexual assault versus just the findings themselves.
It sounds like this is a pretty involved examination. Do you have to be trained as a SANE nurse in order to complete this?
You don't. Every kit comes with a set of directions. It's, you could easily crack the kit and read the directions step by step and complete the examination. So technically, it would get the job done. But in terms of, like I mentioned, competency and evidence collection and preservation and maintaining the integrity of the evidence, properly sealing, properly storing, properly turning the evidence over and completing, because the sexual assault examiner, they're the ones that initiate the chain of custody, which is very important, because if that chain is broken or questionable, all of that evidence could be thrown out in the court of law. And then the patient went through that potentially traumatic experience kind of for naught in terms of collecting the evidence. So you want to, so that in somebody who's not trained, that could be lacking. And these are all things that When the legal nurse consultant is reviewing these cases, you want to look at these aspects as well. But then also, having this performed by somebody who's not trained in forensic examinations could impact the therapeutic aspect towards the victim. They've already suffered this, unmentionable trauma, sexual trauma, and then they come in and they really expect and deserve competent and comprehensive care. And although obviously, handling the healthcare aspects of it is, it's not as difficult when it comes to being able to perform trauma-informed care and providing competent evidence collection, that's where it becomes lacking and where ideally the patients deserve to have somebody trained in forensic examinations to complete these.
Well, take us through, and I'm curious about this, and I know that our listener may be as well. Let's say you're working in an emergency department in a large urban city, and you've got a fairly large flow of patients coming in the ER, and some of them have been sexually assaulted. You could be working in the ER in a rural community where they might have you know, maybe 5 or 10 patients at any one time, if that, in the ER. How does a facility ensure that there is an appropriately trained person available when the victim needs that care?
And really, there's a lot of logistics that come into play when implementing and sustaining a sexual assault examination program, because especially in the rural areas where they may see a sexually assaulted patient maybe 5 a year. So then that, you know, those skills are not maintained as much. So it just kind of, there's different models of care when it comes to sexual assault. There are some of the larger, more urban areas that might have a full-time forensic unit that staffs forensic, nurses 24/7, because they do have the patient load. There are some more of the rural areas, you might have a mobile unit that would be centrally located and then, but then also travels to other counties or other towns in the area. Or you could have, facilities that maybe don't have a trained examiner, but they can transport the patient to the nearest facility with the examiner. So you just, you want to look and see what is the setup. It's going to be the most effective, yet fiscally responsible for that area. So it's very different. There's no one method or one model of care to suit the sexual assault examination needs of a community.
Mm-hmm. And then there are also the differences between examining and explaining this to a child versus an adult. What are some of the nuances that we should be aware of when we're reviewing those records?
When you're reviewing those, so usually one of the more unique things for a pediatric sexual assault examination is the utilization of a forensic interviewer. So this is somebody who is its own specialty outside of healthcare. It's more of an investigative aspect of it, but it's somebody who's specially trained to interview children using age-appropriate techniques to draw out the information. So, when you're going through cases and you're thinking of other experts that this attorney could or should be contacting to perform another review of this case, when it comes to pediatric cases, that's one of the things that you want to look at. Was a forensic interview done? And was it done by a trained forensic interviewer? And then should the attorney that you're working with contact one to review those cases? Another difference is the timing of the examinations. And so for adults, generally, for adolescents and adults, generally the cutoff time is about 5 to 7 days currently. And that's primarily because of the degradation of evidence. So DNA can be found up to about 5 to 7 days, sometimes longer in certain situations, but generally that's where they would cut that off. To appease a patient, to help them start the healing process, some facilities might do that longer, but generally the longer you wait, the less apt you are to actually have biological evidence present to collect. Now with pediatric patients, sometimes in those instances, you might have a greater chance of prolonged sexual abuse rather than one incident itself. And so they will do an examination primarily looking for the physical consequences of ongoing sexual assault rather than focusing on evidence collection. So you might have somebody who reported being assaulted, a month ago. And although they may not collect the forensic evidence during that, they would definitely perform a physical exam and look for genital issues or genital injuries or conditions that could be related to a sexual assault. So those are some of the differences. And so you definitely, especially with pediatric patients, you need to know when the last time the assault occurred and how much time was in between that examination, because that could impact your findings and the interpretation of which.
All right. It gives me the chills to think about children being systematically frequently assaulted. It's horrifying.
It is.
Before we go on, before we continue with the podcast, I wanted to ask you about a course that you and I are planning and give our listener or our viewer an opportunity to know about that. Can you tell us a little bit about what we've got planned?
Yes, it's very exciting, actually. This is the first type of this course I've done. It's a very comprehensive sexual assault examination, analyzing sexual assault cases. And so with the additional evidence or with the additional information that a legal nurse would need in order to perform a thorough analysis of these cases, it's going to be a hybrid course, if you will. So there's going to be pre-recorded lectures on evidence collection techniques, the examination process itself, what the examination can and cannot tell you, reading police reports and other types of reports, talking about drug and alcohol facilitated sexual assault. So, you know, if you're a legal nurse consultant who's not a sexual assault nurse examiner, you still can consult on these cases, and especially after this course, because you'll get some of the foundational information that a sexual assault nurse examiner would have before going into those. And then we'll also have three sample cases for them to review. The first two will be done prior to the live training, and they'll just go through a couple of cases and identify some of the issues that would be brought up. And then the third one is going to be discussed on the 4th of April when we have our live day. And that's where we're going to go more over the actual report writing and some of the recommendations and scientific findings that could be identified during these examinations. So that's on the 4th of April. And we're going to, in the morning, just kind of review and answer questions that they may have about the pre-work that they did. And then the afternoon, we're going to start getting into that third sample case and learn how to formulate criminal case reports, especially sexual assault. And then from there, they can take that information, write a sample report for that, and then send that back and then get both of ours critiques on it just to strengthen those skills that they have.
Well, thank you, Teresa. In order to get information about this course, you would go to this link, which is http://lnc.tips/sexual-assault. There's no space between the words sexual and assault. And if you're watching this podcast after this course has been presented, you may purchase the recordings of the course and get the benefit of completing the exercises and getting our feedback. So be sure to go to http://lnc.tips/sexual-assault. And add this type of case to your skill base in the way that you can help attorneys in analyzing these types of cases. And now let's return to the show. Teresa, we've talked about the SANE report. The police reports are also documentation that we need to pay attention to. What are we looking for in the police reports?
So, you know, each case is different, but if you have a drug or an alcohol facilitated sexual assault, some of the things that you would be looking for would be, signals or behaviors that the victim was too intoxicated or incapacitated to provide consent. Because generally in those cases, that is the central issue, is consent, which is a legal term rather than a medical term, but you would be looking for, did she have periods of memory loss? How much did she drink? How quickly did she drink it? And then also you want to look at witness statements too, because they will ask witnesses, how was the victim acting and how was the perpetrator acting? Did the witnesses, were they able to hold a coherent conversation with him or her? Was the victim stumbling? Were they vomiting? I mean, so you're looking for those telltale signs of intoxication. Now, as a LNC, we wouldn't determine they were too intoxicated. That more falls into the area of forensic psychology, they can better, or even the toxicologist, having a forensic toxicologist review these records would be one of the recommendations I would make in that case. And they would do the same thing, looking for signs and signals of intoxication beyond the point of being able to consent. Also in the reports, you're looking for different things. You know, how did the sexual encounter, is one saying it was consensual, the other saying it wasn't? What, how are each of them describing the act? How does that match up with the physical findings and the evidence that was collected by the nurse? So for instance, if you have somebody who says that they were, you know, completely lucid and they were anally assaulted, then you would be looking for in the SANE exam, you would be looking for somebody who can critically think through that and doesn't just route the examination. So yes, they would do the anal exam. They would do collect evidence in the anal area, but do they really need to focus on the frontal genitals? So that kind of gives you a clue as to, you know, what are some of the areas of competency for the examination, thoroughness of the examination. If somebody says that they were bit on the neck, but there was no neck swab that was conducted, you know, why did they leave that out? Also in the police reports, you just find information. A lot of the times there might be just different information related to how the assault occurred or what happened prior to it or after it that could be relevant to the interpretation of the exam findings.
Oh, wow.
Some of them get pretty complex. Yes.
Absolutely.
a lot to dig in.
And as you were talking, I was thinking about those crime novels that I read where they're very carefully trying to collect a glass from the bar or a coffee cup to be able to get the DNA of the person, to be able to match it up to DNA that might be identified through a SANE exam.
Exactly.
But there are limitations. Let's talk about the limitations from the standpoint of what does the exam not tell you?
Right. So, and I already alluded to one, and I'm talking about adults and adolescents who are legally able to provide consent for sexual encounters right now. So with those, like I mentioned, consent is a legal term. And this examination, although it may be able to confirm sexual contact, it cannot identify if consent was performed or was provided prior to that. That's a legal term that the SANE evidence is then circumstantial evidence that either side uses to bolster their claims of innocence or guilt. And then the jury determines if consent was provided or not. So mm-hmm. That's an important thing. Also, when you're talking about, anogenital injuries, yes, you might have some small lacerations in, you know, if there was an anal penetration, you might have some small lacerations there. You can have small lacerations around the vaginal opening or in the area just below. It's called the posterior fourchette. However, yes, they do indicate trauma and penetration with an object, but what was the object? Can't really determine that. Did the penetration happen with consent? Can't really determine that either, because you can have injury with consensual encounters too. So unfortunately, there's no evidence that supports, you know, this type of injury is only made in non-consensual sexual encounters. Research is at the moment supporting if there's two or more injuries, it's more likely to be associated with a reported sexual assault. And that's one that the patient comes in and they have reported a sexual assault. So looking at those, they have found that in those reports of sexual assault, generally, if you have two or more injuries, it could be more associated with that. The important thing to remember there is that these are not adjudicated sexual assaults. These are reported by the patient. Another limitation is the veracity of the statements. You know, as healthcare providers, we have an understanding. If you, as the patient, wants to receive accurate and appropriate care, I trust as a nurse and a healthcare provider, you're going to tell me the truth. But do patients leave information out? Certainly. Do patients not always tell the truth? Certainly. Is that going to change the way that I provide them care? No, it is not. So these examinations cannot determine the veracity of the statements that were made by the victim or the suspect. You know, That's another important thing. And then also one of the final things is the whodunit factor. The examination itself cannot tell you who engaged in sexual intercourse with the victim. But the evidence that we collect could be very vital, because if you have a suspect that says, no, it wasn't me, I don't know why she's saying it or he's saying it was me. And then the same nurse collects DNA evidence, and then the DNA analyst, they can say, yes, it was him. But again, they cannot say if it was consensual or non-consensual. Mm-hmm. So the whodunit factor through the examination itself does not. But this is another reason why it's very important for the LNC to review procedural and competency aspects of the examination, because what we do as sane examiners certainly impacts what can be identified and found in support of or refute of these allegations by the forensic scientists and the DNA experts as well.
In addition to looking at the SANE report and looking at the police report, are there other services that the LNC can provide to an attorney who's handling this type of case?
Absolutely. You can facilitate, or I do a lot of drafting of cross or direct questions for either the victim related to the sexual assault, to also if the SANE examiner who performed the examination is going to be on the stand providing testimony, assisting in drafting those questions. You can also, obviously education is a huge service that we provide. I mean, lawyers are smart, but they're not, they're not healthcare providers. So just explaining, bless you. explaining the medical terms. What is erythema? What is a contusion? What are those in layman's terms, and helping to educate them so that they can better present the information in an understandable manner to the lay jurors that are going to be digesting all of this information. That's a huge thing. And then, just ongoing trial strategy. How can they utilize some of this medical evidence in developing their case strategy and supporting their theory of the case? So a lot more that we can, there's a lot of services that we can provide.
I think I told you about the woman who claimed that she was sexually assaulted at a specific time, but the attorney was able to get phone records and found out that she was sending text messages during the time that she was allegedly assaulted.
Right. Yes. There's a lot to consider.
Imagine laying there going, all right, let me just text my friend here. Yeah. Doesn't seem to work well.
No, not usually.
Tell our listener about the services that you provide as an LNC, as a SANE nurse.
Pretty much everything that I've been talking about, I meticulously review the cases. I assist them in trial strategy development and cross and direct questions. And then as an adult and adolescent SANE examiner, I do provide expert testimony when needed. So for children, I do the consulting on the back end. But then if they do wind up needing a trained examiner somebody trained in pediatric sexual assault exams, then I help to locate the expert witness for them in those cases, because that's not clinically, that's not my primary area of expertise. So even though I don't see pediatric patients clinically, I certainly do a lot of consulting on pediatric cases, and then just knowing, building up a network of expert witnesses that I can refer to them as well.
How can our listener get in touch with you?
Currently, my website is under construction, but I do own Intrepid I can't even remember the name of my company. Intrepid Forensic Healthcare Consulting. That's my company. Just moved from San Antonio, Texas to Fargo, North Dakota. So I'm trying to reestablish the business up there. They can email me, tdevittlynch@intrepidfhc.com, or I'm on LinkedIn as well. They can just type in Teresa Devitt Lynch and find me that way. Right now, those are the two best ways.
All right. And to reiterate the spelling, Devitt is spelled D-E-V-I-T-T, last name Lynch, L-Y-N-C-H, and first name Teresa with no H in it, T-E-R-E-S-A.
Yes.
Teresa Devitt Lynch. And that was at Intrepid FHC?
Yeah, it's actually T. Devitt Lynch. Without the hyphen. So it's hyphen, it's just all together. T. Devitt Lynch at intrepidfhc.com.
Okay, perfect. All right. Thank you so much, Teresa. You've shed some light on what is a subject that I think many people find mysterious, intriguing, horrifying, all simultaneously, to see our vital role in helping attorneys with these types of emotionally laden cases with a lot of factors hinging on trace evidence, on details that can end up sending a person to prison for a long time in some cases, or to be exonerated.
Yep.
These seem to be the cases that come to the public's mind when they think about people who are unfairly convicted or people who were correctly convicted.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate you bringing your expertise to the subject.
Yes, thanks. And I do hope LNCs that currently are not consulting on these cases consider it, because it's important information that the jurors need to know in a manner that's going to help them to come to the hopefully correct verdict. So I think what we provide in these cases is very vital.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And be sure to look into the information that we shared in mid-show of the sexual assault course, with special training to go deeper into understanding how you as an LNC can assist with sexual assault cases. You can get that information at http://lnc.tips/sexual-assault. There's no space between those two words of sexual and assault. And we would love to be able to give you the knowledge and the support and the feedback that you need to build your confidence and skill level to open up more opportunities to help attorneys.
Exactly. Yes.
Thank you, Teresa, for being a guest. And to you who is watching this show, be sure to come back next week or click on down for the next show, new guest, new topic, and let me know what are the topics that you are most interested in hearing about, and I will find guests for you or ask your questions by contacting me at pateyer@legalnursebusiness.com. My last name is spelled I-Y-E-R, even though a capital I looks a lot like a capital L. I am not Pat Liar. I am Pat Iyer. So Teresa's getting the picture. I go into the courtroom and the court reporter says, "Pat Liar, would you raise your right hand and promise to tell the truth?" Like, how much credibility would I have with the jury? But if you've never been in the courtroom, one of the things you should know is that the court reporter says, would the witness please state and spell her name? And that gives me the opportunity to establish the correct spelling of my last name. It works every time. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I think, from a lawyer's perspective, lawyers are looking for somebody that has states their expert training, experience and knowledge, what they reviewed, what the standards are, what led to whatever happened to the person. And then you are pretty much arguing or supporting your point, whether they were hurt by, say, a nursing home or weren't. And you reach your conclusions and you reserve the right to amend your report as more information comes in. That's key. And I think working with the attorney and their staff is so important. 90% of the time, you'd probably be working with the staff that is building up the case. And the trial lawyer is behind the scenes until it's time for showtime. And I think that that is critical. And I think it's important for the LNC to ask, please give me more. More is less. I'd rather look at depositions, everything, unless you don't want me to. But, you know, it's their trial and it's their mistakes and it's their victories. So you can suggest, you know, I'd like to look at the depositions and maybe it would help me. You know, it's difficult. It's a difficult balance. It's a razor's edge of trying to tell a lawyer how to run his trial or her trial and you doing your job. It's difficult, but I encourage everybody to try it out.
Well, this has been Pat Iyer and Joe Flores. You've got a taste of what Joe covered in the podcast that we just recorded. Be sure to watch his full podcast for tips and tricks and strategies for expert witnesses. This is a great program that you will learn a lot from and enjoy hearing Joe's unique perspective as a nurse, an attorney, a nurse practitioner, and a person who has experience as a legal nurse consultant. Thanks so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.